You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com.
It's Sunday, August 26, 2012, and this is the Webcomic Beacon Newscast with, from the Webcomic Beacon itself, Fess.
Hey.
Our guest today, the creator of the Sailor Ronco webcomic and the CEO of Old School, which you can find at oldeskull.com, Rebecca Heineman.
Hey, everybody.
And I'm Thomas Revor of 910 Comics. That's 910cmx.com. And here's the news this week. We're going to open up with a story about more science being added, more names coming into the webcomic world. That's right, Dr. William Keel and Dr. Pamela Gay, both of which are professors over at the – well, excuse me. Dr. Keel is a professor over at the University of Alabama, and Dr. Gay is an assistant research professor at Southern Illinois University, are coming out with a webcomic with more science news than science fiction. They're going to be introducing this over at DragonCon this year, and they're going to be using things such as pictures from the Hubble Space Telescope and much more to help further the science oddities and bring more people into the news of what's going on with this, all based in a webcomic.
Next up, for science.
For science. Next up, let's go ahead and take a look over at Buzz. Our friends over at the Oatmeal have a couple of stories today in Buzz. Fess, what do we have?
Well, there is a touch of honey added to your oatmeal coming from the Buzz this week, because the oatmeal is taking up all of the Buzz. And, well, first off, I think we mentioned last week that Ingman of the Oatmeal had started a Kickstarter, you know, like he does, to help put together funds needed to buy this facility that was used by Tesla and turn it into a museum. So they need to buy it from, I think, the city or something like that. But it basically, it's this derelict building that's been abandoned, and then needs to be sold. So he is like, I'm going to help use my power to help raise money for this. And they have since succeeded. And do I really have to explain who Tesla is?
Well, if those people don't know who Nikola Tesla is, this museum will certainly help describe it to them.
Yeah, I mean, it's like anything that you've seen about those... you've seen, like, those giant, like, spires with, like, the metal balls on top where there's, like, electricity shooting out. And there's YouTube videos where people are making, like, music with, like, the bolts of electricity at different wavelengths. Those are Tesla coils, and there's a guy that invented those. Aside from that, I don't know as much as... What are you just tweeting at me for? Yes, I know he invented alternating current. I'm not normally on the newscast here.
One of the biggest rivals to Thomas Edison, both are contemporaries, but Edison definitely had a better press machine than Tesla did. Tesla, for the longest time, was virtually unknown. He is now getting a lot of the recognition that he deserves, and this museum is certainly a big step towards it.
It sounds like I need to make a visit once it's open.
Yes, Robin, we know, we've got some of our people, our guests who are going to be... sending us messages here, and we know that it's a big feud between AC and DC. In fact, for those who don't know, Thomas Edison had a system for direct current for power to the homes, and in fact demonstrated the hazards of alternating current by electrocuting a pig, and actually tried to get the phrase Westinghouse to mean electrocution. But that did not go over too well. But let's go ahead and get out of this, and let's go on to our next story.
Yes, the story that still gets us oatmeal, but rather popcorn, as apparently J&D, the popcorn manufacturer, is teamed up with the oatmeal to create sriracha popcorn, a rooster sauce popcorn. Why? I don't know. It's
not enough hot spice popcorn out there.
Yeah, it's Ingman doing what he does, and people are wanting to, I guess, do something... because he's in the news, and it's like, hey, let's promote our stuff, and you get a... This is a first. It's like, how many web cartoonists have a popcorn after them?
That's a good question, but we'll have to get back with that.
No, this is a Thai-inspired kick in the face with red chilies, garlic, sugar, and a hint of vinegar. Just like the rooster sauce that inspired it. So I'm guessing to guess it's something of one of the comics that appeared on the site. I don't read the oatmeal, sorry.
Well, that's a shame, because they do have some interesting stuff over there.
Yeah.
But I think that's it for the buzz, right?
That is it for the buzz, and I am done.
This is definitely one of our more interesting shows. Let's go ahead and go over. I'm going to give you some of the news that's happening over in business today. And we're going to start off with a story about what if Image Comics did webcomics. Over from our friends over at Robot 6 at robot6.comicbookresources.com, they have a story talking about Image Comics being one of the first creator-owned print comic services, founded back in the 90s. It's now reaching its 20th year. And they talk about how some of the things that are going on with Image and webcomics, for example, former Image people over at Top Cow is now partnering with digital portal Thrillbent, Mark Wade's new service, and about how some of the stuff that's going on and how Image has not yet even touched the webcomic realm yet, even though they were the publishers of our friends over at webcomics.com, the How to Make Webcomics book. Which is ironic because our second story in business is talking about Image Comics again. That's right. And how they are going to be releasing 20 of their first issues for free over on the Comixology system over on your iPhone and Android system phones.
This is the more modern number ones, not like your
yes.
old ones.
It includes some of the books such as Mind the Gap, number one, Thief of Thieves, number so you steal thieves. America's Got Powers, number one. Epic Kill, number one. Creator-owned Heroes, number one. Dancer, number one. And, of course, many more. And for those of you who are rushing out to get this now, don't worry. It's not a limited-time thing. Apparently, it's going to permanently remain free. So just go ahead and head over to Comixology and take a look at the stuff and download those free comics so you can get some of the new stuff that Images have to offer. And the last connection that we have over in business, we have an article over talking about Comixology sales by region. That's right. Take a look to see which parts of the world like to look at which particular types of comics or webcomics through the Comixology system. Brought to us over from, of course, at bleedingcool.com. Very interesting things about which parts of the world like what. For example, the number one over at Great Britain is The Walking Dead, of course. I guess that talks a lot about their – well, no. With the number two coming in at Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe and, of course, Avengers versus X-Men, number 10 of 12 being the top three, whereas it's the same top three over in Canada but just in different orders with Walking Dead taking first, Avengers versus X-Men 2, and so on and so forth. But really, Japan, of course, the number one story book that they've got over there is Transformers More Than Meets the Eye. They really love their giant robots. But let's get out of the Comixology world. Let's take a look at what's happening over in the legal world right now. Becky, we've got a big story and definitely a big dollar sign over on our legal department. What's happening over there?
Well, that we do. Right now, there was a jury that, for whatever twisted reason, has decided that Apple's patents over simple things like pinching, twisting, and just double tapping on a touchscreen is completely valid and Apple invented it. And as such, a jury is awarded $1 billion to be given from Apple, given from Samsung to Apple over its line of Android phones that supposedly infringe on these patents. It has come to light just recently that the jury did forget one little thing about prior art. So currently the trial is being this award is being reduced as we speak because things like, I don't know, touching a touch screen being a patent, that has been done before. But for whatever reason, $1 billion. Now, the big problem is going to happen in the comics world is that these are typical commands that are used in most comic book readers, such as like double tapping on a single panel to blow it up or to use your two fingers to pinch, to scale. Those are parts of the patents. So therefore, it's going to – if this actually stands, for whatever reason, it could spell trouble to anybody doing software manipulating images such as like comics.
That's definitely – this is definitely going to be one of the things that we're going to talk about in the discussion portion of the program. And that was billion with a B, not a million with an M. That's a lot of money.
Yep. And if this stands, it also means that anybody making an Android or in some cases Windows phones, unless they pay a big fat royalty fee to Apple, they too are going to be next in having to pay billions in judgments.
I definitely got in the wrong business. Well, thank you for that look at the legal world, Becky. Let's go ahead and go now over and, Fess, go ahead and teach us what's happening in education.
Oh, geez, I'll try. I've been doing a terrible job thus far, but I'll see what I can do. Man, like this first article coming to us from marketingland.com. Chris Studebaker has written an article basically looking at the comparisons between looking at how comic storylines and email programming, which I've been trying to read through this, and I still don't know how to summarize it to people.
Wait, making a correlation between between comic stories and email, that's a little bit of a stretch.
Like comic stories and the publishing, and there's a graph. And it's like, I have no idea what's going on in this. Maybe if you're more of a coder, you can draw a line between this. But I'm not even going to try, but you can check that out at marketingland.com. And at Robot 6, Comic Book Resources, points us to a website that has put together a sort of like a slideshow of Cambodian comics, like 50 years in 20 slides. Pretty straightforward there, along with a YouTube video. And it's more of a visual trip than it is. It's not very wordy. Most of the information is going to be within the YouTube video itself. But this just takes a look at Cambodian comics in its history. moving on to from our friend Sean Kleefeld at Kleefeld on Comics. Lessons webcomics can learn from comic strips. He has once again put together an editorial of sorts. I can't really summarize this article. Once again, I am so terrible at doing the newscast. I am so sorry. But
humility is a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the article myself. Yeah, it really is. It's talking about some of the lessons that we here in the webcomic world can learn from comic strips, and it's talking about some of the storyline and pacing, where instead of going for an elaborate backstory, a lot of the comic strips, you know, have short little plots and can make it easier for readers to follow, and especially in the webcomic world where we have such a different pacing as opposed to the print comics, it brings out a lot of good information that people can use for improving the pacing that they have in their comics.
Actually, you know what's really interesting about this? We just had Christopher Baldwin, who does the webcomic Space Trawler, on the show for Webcomic Beacon, which is going to be coming out the same week as this episode of the newscast as well, and we're basically talking about pacing and update schedules in webcomics and the differences between that and print and newspaper, and it's a discussion in and of itself. I mean, it's something we can certainly expand upon at almost any point in time. I mean, anyone's going to have an opinion, but there's no set rule of thumb, I would say, that works for everybody.
Exactly, and that's why this is going to be one of the items in the discussion period, which we'll have after our second break.
And is it the creator or the character that wins your money? Again, coming from Comic Book Resources, Robot 6, we have an article which basically states that is when you see, you know, think of like when you see Joss Whedon has been a part of this other movie here and there. Are you going to go over to that movie and check it out because Joss Whedon is on it? He's directing it? Or are you going to go check it out because it has the Hulk in it? You know, the sort of, is it the characters or the creators? Or, you know, like in terms of movies, the director. That is really going to make you want to go and check it out and ultimately spend your money on. And hell, we can have a huge discussion on this as well. But you can go ahead and check out the article which was primed by Kurt Busiek, of which I do not know who he is.
Longtime Marvel writer.
There we go. I only just got started on comics last year. And, so go ahead and check that out. And speaking of characters, Sean Clefield, once again, Clefield on Comics, has an article that discusses the importance of character. Which, you know, just ties right. Tom, can you save me again?
Let me take a quick look. The importance of character over at Sean Clefield, clefieldoncomics.blogspot.com. Taking a look at this is, of course, looking at Sean being a great person to take a look at some of the fundamental portions of what consists of a comic. Is talking more about how you create a character and some of the backstory that goes into the character. How much do you want to go into this character as opposed to revealing some of this stuff as it comes out? As he says, I mean, my point is, and this is a quote from Sean, is characterization is really important. You can do stories which may not have the best production values, but if they lack character, if your audience doesn't feel like they're getting real people, you're going to wind up with a pile of direct that even diehard fans won't like. Michael Bay has shown us this with the Transformers movies. Michael Bay has shown us this with all of his movies. As all of us here, both the guests that you'll be hearing in our discussion portion and as well as Becky and others, all of us writers will say, you've got to have characters. You've got to have characters that breathe. And Sean is definitely talking about some of this stuff in this article. Make sure to take a look over at clefieldcomics.blogspot.com.
And to finish up the last bit of the education, which I'm so thoroughly not educated clearly enough about, is why do you foreigners, people like us, like manga? looking at Rocket News 24 at rocketnews24.com, they set their sights on people outside of Japan to find out why us foreigners like manga. They get a lot of basically just, you know, hey, why do you like Japanese manga? And a lot of people
tell us. Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's why do people like anything? You know, it's as if it's some sort of, like, spectacular sort of extra thing. But you can check it out at rocketnews24.com.
And at this point in the show, we're going to go ahead and take our first break. We'll be back with more news, and after our second break, our discussion portion. So stay tuned, listen to these beautiful commercials, and people who help pay for our bills.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter for news links as we find them at Webcomic Z. Email us at webcomicbeaconnews@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922. Love the show? Please grab the iTunes or RSS feed. We are also on Stitcher.com with Stitcher Smart Radio, an on-demand service where you can stitch podcast and radio show feeds together for your own personal streaming service. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic books, news, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. Start off the second break. Let's go ahead and take a look. We're going to have a little more coverage on the Apple trial in our tech division. Becky, you're our top tech head right now. Go ahead and tell us a little more that we've got in the news about what's happening over there.
Well, what we have is just a recap of what we spoke before, which was that Apple had won a trial against Samsung where they were awarded $1 billion. All we need is laser beams on top of the shark's head. Everything's great. But the biggest problem with this is that if this does stand, these patents are so broad that not only are they going to hurt Samsung, but they can also hurt any Android device and even e-readers, because some of these patents involve things like double tapping something to scale up, using two fingers to rotate or to stretch. Everything we're now just taking for granted on touchscreens, so that when we're trying to read comics and so forth, these all are commands that we're just now taking for granted and used to. And supposedly, by the jury's decision, this happens to be a patentable idea that now is exclusive property to Apple.
Laser beams on sharks. I'm trying to figure, doesn't Apple have prior art on that with the iShark?
Yes, after all, you know, that Dr. Evil, don't you know, he owns a majority? What do you think he's doing with Steve Jobs' brain? He's, you know, doing some sort of experiments on it right as we speak.
Now, this is where I'd normally make a joke about Steve Ballmer's brain, but we all know. I'm going to leave that one for the people who know what I think.
Yeah, Zombie's already got to it, so don't worry. And in further news here, we have comics on the Kindle Touch. Currently, the Kindle Touch has Amazon has released documentation right now on how to put comics on the Kindle Touch, how to format them, how to create content, because Amazon is currently trying to woo comic book creators to put comics on their Kindle devices. Now, of course, the original Kindles are all black and white, so comics don't translate very well, whereas the Kindle Touch is color. And Amazon is recognizing that there's a niche market for comic books to be displayed on the Kindle devices. And with this, we might be able to see people, both independent publishers especially, releasing their products on the Kindle Touch for distribution.
Sounds good. Although, I mean, I know that we've got a lot of webcomics out. Even with webcomics, they're still black and white. It's a very popular medium for people to use.
It is. However, though, that not everybody is using black and white. In fact, a majority of comics these days on the web are color, only because there's no additional cost to do color. My personal comic book is color, only because I don't have to worry about spending the money on color printing because I don't plan on printing it.
Unless we have another black and white boom like in the 80s. But
yep.
Who knows? Okay, well, back to you, Tom.
Okay, thank you, Becky. Let's take a quick – we've only got a couple of tidbits today. Starting off with, of course, our friend over at Sean Clefield, Clefield on comics.blogspot.com, who's got – taking a day off because he's hitting his 40th birthday. Welcome to the official old age people club, Sean. Although 40, come on. I remember 40. Well, actually, I don't. That's what happens when you get old. You don't remember these things. So get ready for that type of stuff, Sean. And also over at USAtoday.com. That's right. USA Today, a major publisher, has a story on Spider-Man's 50th anniversary. Man, it's been 50 years since Spider-Man first slung his first web. Boy, talk about feeling old. You're talking about 40 years old, Sean. And they've got 10 of the top things that make Spider-Man special. Go ahead and take a look over to usatoday.com and see some of those things on there that you either may agree with or may not with. But Spidey is certainly something special, especially after hitting 50. And now, Fess, let's go ahead and take a look at some of those oddities on there. And I definitely tell that your top story is certainly an oddity. What have you got?
Oh, there is just something about Liefeld, is there not? Whether or not you hate the man or you think he's just, you know, a wonderful person, and his art may be of some contention for some people as well, regardless of that, really what these stories boil down, coming from Bleeding Cool, is really the artist to editor relationship, to be honest. Rob Liefeld is now leaving DC Comics from the New 52. Apparently, he's tried to quit four other times in the past, but now he's for sure quitting.
What, again? But that trick never works.
I don't know if it's a trick or not, if he's being sweetened to come out. I'm not entirely sure why he was hired in the first place, other than maybe he was... I don't know. He's popular enough. Whether or not you love him or hate him, he's got a name that's got some weight to it for whatever the market is for. Setting all that aside, really what it comes down to, Rob is saying that he's had a lot of just tired of dealing with the editors, Scott Snyder, DiDio, from DC about just, you know, changes, you know, Rob's blaming the editors for the story of the comics that he's been working on, and they're all saying that he's being unreasonable or he's, you know, blowing things out of proportion. And so you got people that are just kind of just having a piss fight on Twitter right now, and no, it's not because he's not wanting to draw feet. It's this sort of meltdown, which is just something that is being watched on Twitter and people are commenting on with, you know, we can never really know what the actual real story is going on behind the scenes of DC, but it still can bring up a good discussion on a creator versus editor relationship. Yes, jokes all around for everybody. So this is something you probably want to keep track of. I would love to get Rob Liefeld on the Webcomic Beacon to have an interview. Just to, you know, see what's going on. But let's move away from that for now. Has Google Maps found other pyramids? Well, maybe. There's an article coming from Smithsonian.com of Google Earth finding areas on the planet which are suspicious enough to be two sets of potential pyramids about 90 miles apart found in northern Egypt. I wouldn't really credit Google Earth. Google doesn't have the satellites. They're just utilizing satellite images, so it's whoever took the original pictures. But whatever. You can check that out at SmithsonianMag.org. And let's see here. Our last oddity is Barack Obama leads amongst robots. It's a scene right out of Futurama, which is how Richard Nixon's head got reelected. This article from GigOhm describes a growing number of fake Twitter accounts that are attached to politicians' accounts. Fake Twitter accounts and robo-tweet accounts are nothing new. In fact, you can go to eBay and you can buy thousands of fake Twitter accounts to follow you, or anyone's account, really, so you can't really blame any one politician because everybody could be, like, buying everybody else to make them look bad. But as far as the worst offenders, according to the article, is Barack Obama's Twitter account, so hooray politics. And that's it for the oddities.
Well, it's a good thing that they had this about this, and here I thought only the dead followed Barack Obama.
Okay, now if you told me to take out that one line, and you put that in at the end, it's no wonder why Mitt Romney hasn't been following Obama then.
Hey, he's a Chicago politician, you know, where the rule is vote early and vote often.
Oh, but the GOP doesn't want people to vote early anymore with voting restrictions. Anyway, moving on from politics, I think it's time for our next break, and when we come back, we're going to have our discussion period.
Hey, wait a minute, that's my line. We'll be back after this.
I see okay, what you did clear. There.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and animationaficionados.com.
I think Tom is our first and only conservative member of the Webcast Beacon Network crew. So.
Oh, I'm very conservative, but I'm also I'm from Chicago, so I'm all too familiar with how Chicago politics work. I've always said that the Honorable Richard J. Daley Sr. was one of the biggest crooks Chicago had, but he was a crook for Chicago, not against it, unlike the imposters that came after him.
Oh, that makes it so much better.
So much better.
He was a thief, but he was an honest thief.
He was an honest thief.
He's a thief, but an honest thief. Yes.
He's like Pootie Long from Louisiana. He realized that he could get more money skimming off the top if the place was successful. Yep.
Well, there is something to be said about some of that. You know, the reason why, you know, the Mexican government and all these murders are happening in Mexico are because people that we get a new politician coming in, it's like, oh, I'm going to get rid of all this corruption and such. And apparently the corruption was holding it back. But it's like it's still not a good answer. It's just a more sticky mess to get through.
Well, the tune may change, but the song remains the same.
Anyway, webcomics.
Welcome back to the April Fool's August 26th episode of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. Now for that time that you all have been waiting for, our discussion period. Let me bring up our cast of characters today. From the Webcomic Beacon, we have Fess.
Yay!
Yeah, I wear Fess now. Fess is cool.
Or bow ties.
Beck from the Sailor Ronco webcomic and the CEO of Old School at oldeskul.com, Rebecca Heineman.
Hey, everybody.
And introducing our peanut gallery who couldn't shut up on Skype during the newscast, starting off with from Accidental Centaurs and the publisher of Moonbase Press, home of the print versions of Kevin and Kel on the Fast Track, Safe Havens, and Scary Gary, John Lotshaw.
Hey, hey.
And a dual team from The Watch, we have both the co-creator and colorist, Robin Erickson.
That's me.
As well as new artist, Ian Sampson, also the creator, artist, and writer of his own webcomic over at cityofreality.com.
Howdy, howdy.
And that leaves me, your ringmaster. I'm Thomas Revor from 910 Comics. That's 910cmx.com. Our top story for discussion, of course, we have to talk about the Apple-Samsung lawsuit. I mean, this is big news, both not only in the tech world, but this is going to have a major effect on the way things are going to work, even for us here in webcomics, with more and more people using things such as the iPad, the iTouch tablets, whether it be Windows, Android, or Apple's. Becky, like I said, you're our other resident tech head, and you were the ones who talked about the stories in the newscast. Why don't you go ahead and give us a quick rundown as to some of the things that will be affected by this?
Well, the main thing that's being affected by this is that it essentially gives Apple carte blanche to go around suing everybody in sight who makes any device that even remotely looks like an iPhone or acts like an iPhone. And we're talking things as simple as double tapping on the screen or pinching and rotating using two fingers. They even tried to patent having devices that are rectangular with rounded corners. That's one of their patents.
It's been a contention over with some of us. I know that Eric and I have gone round and round on some of the changes that need to be made for the patent laws. Some of this just seems awfully silly. Even with the protections that patents have, some of the things that are coming out nowadays for patents are things that have been in existence for a long time. I mean, touchscreens themselves. I've got a touchscreen that I've used for the past 10 years, and granted it was a glorified mouse, but a lot of the functionality that we use for the iPad and other tablets and phones have been around for a long time.
Well, the whole patent process is broken. I mean, the fact that some of these things which do have prior art are being patented in the face of the prior art, and then getting through the patent office is proof that there's definitely changes that need to be made. The patent system that we have now is basically intended to handle the Industrial Revolution. It really isn't suited for today's technology.
And I agree. I mean, it's totally not suited.
It's totally not suited. It is antediluvian in the way that it works. It was only something like 30 years ago that they made them stop building models to submit along with the patent applications.
Exactly. I've seen some of these patents out in there, and they're for things that are – I mean, they give a broad brush to they don't show how it's going to be done. They just say, okay, this is what I want to do.
And here's another problem. This just came up. I just saw this through Slashdot. Grok Law has just posted a summary of some of the comments from some of the jurors. And one of the jurors, Apple versus Samsung juror Manuel Ilagan, said the 9-person jury heard the patent infringement case between the companies, knew that after the first day, believed Samsung had wronged Apple. But it goes on to say that they actually skipped the discussion of prior art because it was, quote, bogging them down, unquote.
Oh,
yeah, and that very statement right there is grounds for an appeal or a retrial, because the whole point of a patent is that there is no prior art. You invented this.
Exactly.
And if it can be proven that there's previous art on this, right, the patent's invalid.
This decision is not going to stand. And that's another thing to remember, is that this is only the first stage in a very long process of this winding its way to court. And I wouldn't be surprised with as important as mobile devices are going to be, that this ends up at the Supreme Court.
It definitely may take something coming down like this from the high court of the land, especially when it shows that a lot of the people out there in the juries, don't. I mean, it's not just not only knowing the way the convoluted patent laws are, but are not taking anything into consideration that affects the rest of the law.
And here's another interesting thing. One of the foreman of the jury actually is a intellectual properties patent holder. So he's supposed to understand how this works. He was supposed to explain this to the jury to get them to go over it, and they just skipped over it.
Well, being a holder does not necessarily mean that you actually understand it. It's like somebody who drives a car and can't repair an engine.
Now, there is one – now, it is obvious – or not obvious, it's obvious, but there is another thing that is separate from the from the patents that are in question here, and that has to do with trade dress, and that is making the product look similar. Did they make it look similar enough that someone could confuse it for another company's product? And that was another thing that they found, was that Samsung did make it in it, and this was separate from the patent question, but the trade dress was also infringing upon Apple's trade dress.
Now, that I can definitely see. I mean, because they did go through to emulate the look of the iPhone,
right,
and iPad, as opposed to, say, what Windows is doing. I mean, as the Windows Phone and the Windows tablets have a whole new look, very similar to what they've done with the Xbox.
And that's a completely different issue from the patents.
Right.
It's confusing that they tied this all up together in the same case, but those were also decisions that they made, about the trade dress. So it's, but again, remember, we're really at the very beginnings of this, and this is going to go on for a long time because there's just too much at stake. Yeah. The mobile market is turning into such a huge thing that everybody's trying to stake their claim. And where do they stake their claims? They stake it in the courts.
And for the matter of disclosure, let me go ahead and say that John, Becky, and I are all Apple computer owners. And I know that both Becky and I have iPhones. So, I mean, this isn't just coming off the top of our heads. We are people who enjoy the technologies.
Yeah.
Let me jump in with the perspective of a person that doesn't really care at all about Apple or about all the different types of Google. I mean, I can talk about Google platforms in general, but I have no frickin' idea about each of these different companies and their products. Samsung, HTC, you know, whatever. They're all rectangular sort of devices, and me as a consumer, I guess I would expect or demand that there'd be a sort of standard size for which to put my device in certain third-party product things like covers or placeholders to play on a boombox or in my car. I mean, you can't go too incredibly different because,
Take a look at some of the other smartphones on there, the ones that have the keyboards attached, the ones that flip closed. To say that it has to be a standardized thing isn't exactly true, because there are a lot of phones out there that are different.
And also, it's not in the interest of Apple or Samsung or HTC or LG or anybody else to have a standard size for cell phones. They want what's called vendor lock-in, which means you buy an iPhone and you're going to have to buy iPhone accessories, which are licensed through Apple, because the connector to power the things is patented by Apple. And anybody who makes a third party one, and they've got to cough up to Apple for the rights to make that device.
Right. So they're licensing all these.
Example. I mean, that's why all these other phones. Even the iPhone and iPad have proprietary connectors to hook up to your computer or to hook up to a charger.
And that's one of the big things about the so-called iPhone 5 and new iPad that's supposed to be announced, or hopefully they're saying sometime next – they're going to announce the announcement sometime next week, is that there's going to be a new dock connector for the iPhones, which means you got to buy all those devices all over again.
Or adapters, which people will be making.
But you're going to have to buy something. So that's more money coming into Apple's coffers. So Apple has no interest, neither does Samsung, neither does anybody who manufactures any kind of device, in a standard size.
Exactly. Just from my own personal experience, I'm looking at changing carriers from AT&T because of poor service from AT&T, but I'm still going with an iPad, or excuse me, an iPhone, so I can keep all the apps, the proprietary apps that I have bought on that same platform. I don't want to lose some of those things, which they don't have on the Android. But let's go ahead and go back to our next topic. We had a couple of stories talking about the lessons webcomics can learn from comic strips, where they talked about some of the plotting in comic strips at how that could be used for webcomics, and about the importance of character, both of which came from our friend Sean Kleefeld. This is one of the stories that this topics that I can go on and on and on about, and as some of the people here could say, I have, and that is, you cannot stress, even in a humor comic, you cannot stress the importance of characterization. You've got to have a character that you can believe that actually lives and breathes in your mind. And the same thing for plot. You've got to have something that's consistent. But here they were talking about shortening it down, sort of an episodic versus a serial, to where you can have things self-contained for people who come in. Robin, I mean, The Watch has been running on – it's reaching its 10th anniversary.
That's very right,
soon.
November.
What about the plotting over there? Because it is something that is not really self-contained. I mean, you can pick up an article – you can pick up a chapter, quote-unquote, from a webcomic and read through it and it makes sense. But you still have a long history to draw upon. Do you think that it needs to be self-contained, where, I mean, you can reintroduce things and for people who have never seen the comic before in each new chapter?
If you do that, you do need to make pointers back to when they originally aired, because we're getting that problem this time. But if you make the comics, if you write well enough, people could pick up any comic and just enjoy it the entire way through. I mean, and yeah, episodic is nice in the fact that you have a longer running plot, but for enjoyability factor, you just need to have a well enough story that you can hop in at any point and say, oh, that was great. Now I can go back and see what I missed and such.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's one of the John, you've also – AC's been around for a long time. It's been around almost 10 years as well.
Actually, it's been over 10 years. We had 10th anniversary was in January. Thank you.
Yeah, and if you take out all the hiatuses, you've been around 3 years. But
3 years.
Another
right.
story. that's one of the big differences between webcomics and – yeah, comic strips or comic books is that you keep the entire thing online so people can go back and read the entire catalog.
I do have to kind of disagree with Sean on some of the things that he was saying there about got to keep it simple. The reason why comics are simple in the newspaper is because of the nature of that medium. People don't read newspapers on a regular basis anymore. They just don't. And trying to do a continuity strip of any sort in a newspaper is, these days, it's almost impossible, because basically you have to end up having him to recap the previous strip in the first half of one day's strip. So your pacing is just slow as molasses. I remember I was actually following, yes, believe it or not, Mary Worth. But
we'll make fun of you on that later.
There was a storyline that they were doing that was just really funny, where this Captain Kangaroo lookalike named Aldo Kerlast was stalking Mary Worth, and he ends up going over a cliff after drinking a couple of bottles of vodka. It was just the way that it was being handled was very funny, and it was kind of tongue in cheek the way they were doing it, you know, about this guy self destructing, very tongue in cheek. And but every daily strip would be almost a recap of everything that had happened in the previous day's strip, and then one panel added on to advance the story, because people don't read a newspaper on a daily basis like they used to. They used to do this with newspapers. Continuity strips were very, very important in the earlier days of comics.
Right. I was going to say that two well-known examples of continuity strips would have been things like Gasoline Alley, where the story not only progressed, but the people got older and they changed casts over the cast of time. Or Prince Valiant, which is still running nowadays.
Steve Canyon, Terry and the Pirates, to mention two of the great Milton Caniff's stories. I mean, even Superman. Superman started as a continuity strip. It was originally intended as a continuity strip. It didn't get sold, and then it was sold to DC, and that led on to other things. But continuity strips were a very important part of the comics page back then. But readership has changed. So now you pick up a newspaper very infrequently, very intermittently, and look at the comics pages on that type of a basis. And you don't so that's why there's most of the strips are gag strips and are very self-contained, like a Beetle Bailey or Dennis the Menace, where it's very self-contained. You don't have to know the whole back. You just need to know Beetle Bailey's in the army, or that Dennis the Menace is this 5-year-old kid that harasses his neighbor. That's all you've got to know to read those strips. You don't have to know the full backstory. Whereas with a webcomic, you have this ability to have the archive, and if the script, and I have to agree with him about character. You got to have characters grab you and draw you in, and then make you go back and read the to catch up and say, well, how did this character get to this point? You have that available where you don't have that in the newspaper, and I think that the real lesson that he has there, I think he's. Is about character.
Well, Ian, let me pick on you a little bit, because you've got both the best of both worlds right now. As the artist on The Watch, which, as we said, has been a long-running webcomic, 10 years now, as well as a relatively new comic, Your Own City of Reality, you deal with both the new and the older way with both plotting, art, and characterization. Let's go ahead and get your viewpoint on this.
Some of my favorite webcomics have done the kind of thing that I'm trying to do. It does have a long-running storyline like The Watch or City of Reality, but every single strip has to have a punchline, has to have a cliffhanger, something that makes that single strip interesting on its own, which is important because we have our Monday, Wednesday, Friday schedules or our weekly schedules, and just anyone who picks up a newspaper, that single strip has to draw a person in all by itself, no backstory, no previously ons or anything like that. So I think that's one of the things that with our current webcomic schedules, it's almost necessary if you want to do like a story strip. You do still have to have that kind of mindset where each strip means something and is individually entertaining.
Well, I think that's a good way of summing it up. As I've said in the past, when you're talking about webcomic writing versus comic books or comic strips, you have to go through, and every page has to be unique in the fact that it has to have your opening, it has to have your hook on the end to pull people back, and you have to get people interested enough in the characters. They have to live and breathe, as I've said, to where they will want to go back and read through the archives. And I know that a lot of us who have been writing webcomics hear from people saying, oh, I loved your comic, I got interested by this, and I had to go back and read through the archives, which is the big advantage we have over any other comic medium in existence now. But let's go ahead and talk about something that's got an even longer history than webcomics or our archives. Becky, I'm going to bounce this one off of you because this is right up your alley with Sailor Ronco. And why do non-Japanese like manga?
You mean manga?
Manga.
Well, manga is just an art form. That's really that's what it boils down to. Whereas in other countries, especially the United States, we've kind of been conditioned to believe that comics are only either for kids or superheroes, and that's it. Whereas in manga, anything goes. The counterpart to manga, anime, is treated as such a serious art form that when you in Japan, if you were to watch an animated movie, you take it with the exact same amount of seriousness as if you're watching a live-action film. So as a result, when they do stories in Japanese manga, it could be anything from just the equivalent of Friends, the TV series, being just done in a comic book form, to some fantastical giant robot thing, to just a standard high school comedy. And because of this, the wide range of stories – when you look at stories coming out from, let's say, DC or Marvel, almost everything coming out is just superheroes. That's it. Whereas with manga, anything you can imagine, there's probably a manga coming out with that type of storyline. So hence the main reason, in my opinion, is why people are drawn to manga is mostly because you get all the variety.
Now, Robin, you're also a big manga fan. Let's go ahead and get your take on this. Because, I mean, to me, when I was introduced to it, and I realized, I mean, I was introduced to anime with the old stuff, Speed Racer, Astro Boy, Gigantor. And even nowadays, it still has a very similar look. I used to call cookie-cutter animation because it all looked the same. It all used the same tropes. What do you think the big fascination for manga or anime is?
Well, it's very similar to what Becky said, is that you can get it on any subject. It can be serious or it can be silly. And while the art may seem different at first, you actually get a really good – you can actually really see the different artists that do it. And it's really obvious over time, like, oh, that's this artist or that's this artist. It's not as similar as it looks. It's just a very similar style. Western art has – actually, to Japanese, Western art looks the same in the same way. It's fun. It's just a lot of fun all over. You can find just some of the great stories just all around.
Ian, I'm going to pick on you again because you're so much fun to pick on. I've been introduced to and some of the storylines are great, and especially with things like, and this is going into anime more than manga, John Lasseter, the head of Pixar, is a huge fan of Miyazaki. And that's the reason that a lot of his films have come out over here, such as most recently the story of Arrietty, to Spirit Away, to so many other things. Do you think that it's the storylines that are drawing people in? Do you think it's the art style that's drawing people in? Do you think it's a combination of the Air Force? And what do you think is the big attraction?
Well, I'm actually kind of an odd person to ask because I haven't really been drawn too much into anime or manga myself personally. Both of my brothers have, and maybe it's because they've been pushing so hard for me to get into it. Like, you should drop all the stuff you're doing and read these. Here, let me throw these books at you. And I don't know. I haven't really gotten too much into it. And the ones I have watched, there's a different element, a foreign element, like a Eastern style storytelling, which I can't totally describe, is just different from Western style storytelling. And personally, I don't prefer it. But I think that element of the exotic, that element of being different, that is a major draw for a lot of people. And going back to what we've said before, just the fact that manga does actually look at things in a more mature perspective. They allow more things. I've seen manga that my brothers have shown me that have covered like mountain climbing and hiking and what is it? Wedding betrothals and stuff like that that you don't see from DC or Marvel, and I think we're kind of starved for it. I would prefer that we'd have more Western style stories. We have like the Flight anthologies and all sorts of independent comics coming out now that cover that are starting to gain that ground, and web comics that are, you know, anything under the sun. And I hope that we start to pick up the best things from manga and anime.
Yeah, I will say, I mean, I've seen comics from other countries such as France, definitely a lot of English stuff, some German, even some Russian, and yet there is a thread of commonality, you know, the stuff that is familiar with the way that these comics are written. The manga definitely does have a different perspective in the way that they are written. But let's go ahead and go to our last story.
No. I'm going to jump in here. I didn't get a chance to say anything the whole time.
Okay, Fess, let's go ahead and get your opinion with the manga story.
All right. Well, here's the thing about manga and anime, if you will. In general, it's that they do explore a lot of different types of genres and stuff that we don't even have live action shows about. They just kind of, if they say, oh, there's a niche market for that, let's see if we can exploit that, more or less. And also when you look at like manga and anime, there tends to be a lot, at least what a lot of people are going to be seeing over here right away, is a lot of cheesecake, a lot of TNA, a lot of gratuitousness of not just so much sexually or sexism, but also a lot of gore and such like that. And but there, I have seen many, several anime that where there isn't a cheesecake to it so much. It's a little bit more tame, a little bit more of a children's level of angle for it. And really, it's. I think it's because that it might be that the more the Western styles, at least and as far as America is concerned, doesn't take the chance to jump into something that might be too niche for them that they won't be able to possibly make money off of it. Is my best sort of thing. This rolls back into webcomics where there's a lot of niche webcomics out there that can take advantage of a niche market and maybe can expand within itself by getting a familiarity with and understand that, well, this might just be the audience that you'll get and you'll just have to be happy with it. And I just wanted to bring that out.
Well, actually, you said something that made me think of something that I read once, and I'm going to bounce this over to you, Becky. I seem to remember them saying that there are basically four major types of manga, and there are four broken down by age and sex, so where you've got the manga that's specifically for young boys, that for young girls, that for older men, and that for older women, to where, again, this is from what I'm remembering or read. The women is more soap opera-ish, the older women. The young girls is like the young romance novels. The boys is things like Naruto, that's the action-adventure, and the older men stuff we don't discuss on the podcast. is this true, Becky?
Well, you could say that with everything. You know, it's like saying comics. They're broken into superhero, kids comics, adult comics, and so forth. Well, same goes for manga. Now, they do have specific genres based on targets. Like they have Bishonen, which is targeted for young men. They have Bishoujo, which is targeted for young women. And then, of course, you've got hentai, which is basically for those of very, very discriminating tastes.
Okay, who's snickering out there? But let's go ahead. I want to go ahead and wrap this up because we've got one last story that we want to talk about. And, John, you're on the spot for this one because you were the leader of the peanut gallery during the entire story about this. And that is Nikolai Tesla, the oatmeal funding the revitalization of his last lab, the building over there, and turning it into a museum. Who exactly was Nikolai Tesla? We've seen a lot of Tesla being brought up more and more in popular culture, movie, TV, stuff like this. Most notably to me recently was the movie The Prestige, a marvelous movie with Hugh Jackman and Christian Bale.
Well,
who is Nikolai Tesla?
Well, let me just say this. Everybody at home listening to this right now, get up. Go over by the door and turn on the light and say, thank you, Nikolai Tesla. Tesla was an electrical engineer in the last century and the early part of the 20th – actually, the previous century to that, last part of the 19th and 20th century. I keep forgetting it's 21st century. We're only 12 years into it, right? He basically invented the infrastructure that we now use to generate and transmit electricity. He was the one that developed alternating current, and that was just for starters. He was just a genius. He created working for George Westinghouse. The infrastructure, the generation capabilities, transformers, everything needed to transmit power over wires using alternating current as opposed to direct current, which is, as Tom mentioned, was what Thomas Edison was championing. And there was what was known as the War of the Currents, where they were the two companies, Westinghouse holding Tesla's patents and General Electric, or what is now General Electric, holding the Edison patents, were competing with different communities to basically build out their electrical infrastructure. What Edison would do is he would go in and have people round up stray dogs, stray cats, other animals, and do public electrocutions to show how dangerous alternating current was. Obviously, alternating current won out because it technically it was a better means because you could transmit the power longer distances. So that means you didn't have to have a power plant on every street block, which was basically what was being said.
Now, it wasn't just that. I've seen pictures of a whole block set up for DC power, and they had approximately like 50,000 feet of cable to feed one city block.
Yeah,
and a transformer basically on every corner. But Tesla wasn't just limited to just electricity. I remember an episode of MythBusters back in the early seasons where they had something about a resonation device that Tesla supposedly invented that could bring down a building.
Tesla was actually another thing he was working on was attempting to transmit power wirelessly so that basically you would be able to broadcast out electrical current, pick it up over the air, and dispense with the wires. And there are all kinds of stories about that some of his experiments actually caused the Tunguska blast in Russia in 1908. It was 1908. Yeah, 1908. And just all kinds of weird stories about some of the things that he was working on, that there are all of these patents that he had that are currently being held by the U.S. government as being top secret even 100 years later because they can be used to build death rays and all kinds of wacky stuff like that. So Tesla definitely is a figure that is deserving of getting more credit than he has in the past. He's one of those forgotten geniuses,
Well, I don't know if so much forgotten as people were made to forget him. I remember that there was a huge smear campaign against Tesla as well.
Exactly.
Edison.
And another person, it seems like that era of electrification is rife with those kinds of stories. There's another engineer, his name was Edwin Armstrong, and his work was totally buried by RCA because he invented frequency modulation. And RCA and David Sarnoff had a huge investment in AM radio stations. And FM was relegated to secondary status, just as Edison tried to do with alternating current. The difference was that Westinghouse had a little bit more clout behind him than Armstrong did, but I'm glad to see that Matthew Inman has done this. It's an interesting demonstration of the power of web-based communities that he's able to do this, because he does have a lot of readers and a lot of followers, and obviously the challenge was just the tip of the iceberg for him.
It's definitely one of those fascinating stories, and we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. I want to go ahead and, before I introduce our cast for one final time, talking about Armstrong, I do want to mention, for those of you who don't know or haven't heard yet, the first man on the moon, Neil Armstrong, has passed away this past week.
A bad week for people named Armstrong.
Yeah, so definitely somebody who not only made history, but to use the famous phrase, changed the course of human events with one small step. But on that note, let's go ahead and introduce our cast, people who have set their own small steps and working on the giant leaps, starting off with our main host from the webcomic Beacon, Fess.
Yay.
From The Watch, I want to go ahead and thank both Robin Erickson.
Oh, hi. Yeah, no problem.
The very alert Robin Erickson and Ian Sampson.
Howdy, howdy.
Of course, our good friend Becky Heineman.
Hey, hey.
And our not as good a friend, John Lotshaw.
Yeah, same back at you.
And that leaves me. I'm your host, Thomas Revor from 910 Comics. That's 910CMX.com. We'll see you next week, and we'll see you in the funny papers.